Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Sean and Dan discuss the recent storms that swept through Indiana and how corn and soybeans might be impacted.
A little bit of root lodging, primarily and actually in younger corn, corn that was probably in the V8 to V12 growth stage. Had some pictures sent to me, actually saw some of my neighbor's corn here in West Lafayette the day after that. That was leaning pretty good.
Too much water, saturated conditions, it pushes out any oxygen in the soil that the roots need. And so within both crops, if you push out that oxygen, we need that. Those plants need it to respire, to burn the energy that's created through photosynthesis.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments yesterday are paying off today. New research, new uses, demand creation, bringing dollars back to the farm. Check it out at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
We're at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center, West Lafayette, and we thank our sponsors, the folks with Indiana Corn and Soy. We're here for another edition of the Purdue Crop Chat podcast. Here we are, late July, and, you know, things have changed a little bit since we last spoke. Primarily, just some big storms that have rolled across the state, and I think that that's kind of where we start here this week, gentlemen. Purdue's Dan Corn Quinn over here to my left. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
And soybean Sean Castile over here to my right. Sean, good morning.
Howdy, howdy.
We are getting going early this morning on this Monday morning because it's getting to be this busy time of year. We've got things going on. Things are really starting to ramp up. We've got the state fair starting here in a couple of weeks. We've got a lot of things going on. So apparently the time to get together is 8 a.m. on a Monday. I don't know that I necessarily wanted to start my week this way, but here we are.
Well, it's got to get better from here.
Seeing used guys.
Well, at least this is the worst part of your week. The rest of it can be good.
You're
seeing
here,
us.
From here.
By the way, I wanted to point out to you guys, I do come bearing, you'll notice I'm not nearly as weighed down this week. I've got some fancy new stuff. You guys can't hear it because it's all going into my headphones, but it comes with some new toys. You know, my sole purpose here is to bring comic relief to this thing because we all know you two aren't.
A laugh or fart noises.
Well, I do have an applause track for when I do something spectacular, so I just do that. You're welcome. Yes, and I do also have the rim shot here for when I do bring, you know, the obvious hilarity to the conversation.
And, so. And the point is that we can't hear those same voices that you talk about in your head.
There we go. So yes, I do bring new toys to the podcast here as well. Anyway, let's talk about some of these storms that rolled through. Dan, obviously, let's start with you. Sean will say that I'm just guessing corn is the diva that really had to deal with these storms. Soybeans completely unaffected, yeah. Because you know his perfect little plant is just right there in its perfect little place and was completely undeterred by these storms. Am I right?
Yeah, the thing about corn, it's a good windbreak for the soybeans.
There you go. So let's talk about this. We had the one storm roll through really a couple weeks ago, and I was talking with a farmer from Benton County, and maybe we spoke too soon. I don't know. I haven't spoken with him since. But that first storm rolled through, and he's like, look, we got about 3.5 to 5 inches out of that. And I know that some folks farther north got more than that.
Yeah.
And maybe that was a little too much. I don't know. Maybe they were okay with it because it had been a little dry prior to that. And he's like, look, the 3.5 to 5, I'm good with it.
Yep.
We took it up pretty well. I don't know that we need any more anytime soon. We'll take that. And he said, look, it's not in the bin yet, but I'm looking at maybe a record crop. Like I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm okay with this, but we don't need any more anytime real soon. And then boom, we got a little bit more pretty soon.
Yeah.
What are we looking like out there, Dan?
Well, I think, you know, when that first storm that rolled through a couple weeks ago, I think that was kind of the worst of it. But you know, in all reality, it was more concern out there than what actually became our concern a few days after. You know, there's some, you know, concerns of wind damage, you know, there's some concerns of flooding. But for the most part, right, I think a lot of the areas around the state, even I did a field day up in Stark County, not long after that storm, came through, and there's areas, some farmers I talked to up there that got, you know, 6+ inches, but they told me they don't have any water standing after that. You know, a lot lighter soils up there, a lot sandier soils up there, but they soaked a lot of it up. And that was the case around the state. A lot of areas got significant rains, but a lot of those areas didn't have much flooding. There was some flooding around in some localized areas that I did notice. But it really didn't last too long. And it really came at a period of time when that corn really needed it and was using a lot of water, right? A lot of the crop is in pollination right now, either completed pollination or entering pollination around the state. And you think about that's peak water use for that crop. It's a time where that corn crop is really sensitive to any water stress. So a lot of the crop got the necessary rain that it needed. A few observations we did notice, particularly from that storm a couple weeks ago, was a little bit of root lodging, primarily and actually in younger corn, corn that was probably in the V8 to V12 growth stage. Had some pictures sent to me, actually saw some of my neighbor's corn here in West Lafayette the day after that, that was leaning pretty good. The good thing is a lot of that crop really recovered in 2 to 3 days. You know, corn is pretty resilient to root lodging. And what I mean by root lodging is that we're not snapping that stalk. We're not having green snap or any issues like that. It's just more when that soil gets really, really moist, like 3-4 inches of rain, and then you have wind on top of it, right? That crop is just lodging basically at the roots, right? So the roots are coming out of the soil a little bit. But, you know, a lot of the crop really recovered very well. You can notice some goosenecking out there, but, you know, a lot of that crop, as long as it recovers in time for pollination, we should be okay. Shouldn't expect a whole lot of yield loss. But a lot of the crop that was in pollination at that time is standing, looks really good. There's a little concern, you know, some of the sweet corn growers, some of the popcorn growers, that maybe had a little more instances of lodging. But for the most part, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot worse than what it actually was when those storms came through. And a lot of the crop looks pretty good around the state.
And then with this most recent round of storms, mm-hmm. it wasn't as big of a deal, you're saying? I mean, it just really didn't hit that hard.
Yeah, not as when it started to come through. I think it was coming across Illinois and parts of Chicago was having tornado warnings and stuff like that. I was getting pretty concerned. There's concerns of, you know, if we're going to have a derecho in the state. I think, you know, Illinois took a little more brunt of that storm that came through. But it just, you know, wasn't as significant as what I thought it was going to be. I think northern Indiana probably took more of the brunt of that. But again, those parts of the state, there's lots more sandy areas up there, a lot more areas that can soak up that water. Just talking to some of the folks up in northern Indiana, I actually talked to some folks in southern Michigan as well last week, and stuff looks really good up there. Even with the heavy rainfall, even with the heavy winds, majority of the crop is still standing. A lot of the crop has the moisture that it needs as it goes into pollination. I would expect, you know, really excellent pollination and kernel numbers across the state, something that we've kind of been seeing the last few years. It's just whether or not we can keep it going and track it through grain fill here.
Now, again, Sean, as we talk about soybeans and some of these storms that rolled through, what were, you know, obviously wind not as big of an issue, but you know, from what I saw driving up north, especially a couple of weekends ago up toward Plymouth, a lot of soybeans kind of underwater. Yep. Up there. It was some flooding, some ponding going on. Yep. Up there.
Yeah, so I think that is the issue that would come with these storms is the amount of water that would just create saturated conditions. And so for either crop, that's not a good situation, right? Too much water, saturated conditions, it pushes out any oxygen in the soil that the roots need. And so within both crops, if you push out that oxygen, we need that. Those plants need it to respire, to burn the energy that's created through photosynthesis. So if we push that out, those roots start dying in those situations. And so that's really what's going on in those. And so the other part that's insult to injury on the ponded conditions on soybeans is that it's hitting the roots but also hitting the nodules. And so what that does, unfortunately, is if we are sustained saturated conditions for days on end to a week, Now we have root nodules. So again, the bacteria that infected the root hairs to create nitrogen. Now our nitrogen suppliers are going to be kind of cut off at the knees, so to speak. And so in those situations, in a year that gets rain, get these storms week after week, those ponded areas are just going to stay kind of a little bit behind. They're not going to catch up quite as much. And so what we can do, or at least have the patience in our mind, is that if those nodules are dead, you dig them up, you look for the nodules. Are they white, red, or dead? And so if they're white, they're growing. If they're red, they're actually fixing nitrogen. And then dead would be characterizing, they're mushy, they're just squishing in your hand. So that's the best thing that growers can do in those areas, is just assess what kind of nodule death or activity you do have.
You know, I think that early on, the concern was, you know, we got all of this moisture, and the concern is, okay, are we getting all of our annual rainfall here early? Are we going to get enough late?
Sure.
Because it's not like, you know, we have an annual rainfall average here. It's not like, okay, we got all this early and we're still going to get what we normally get late. It kind of does tend to average out.
Sure.
You know, we got all that early, and now we're still getting some here in July. Is this a concern of yours? Are we going to have enough here come August for your soybeans? Because that's when these things are made, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, last year is a perfect example of that. June was how dry and hot, but we had enough moisture for those roots to continue going deeper, and that's a situation that we really want. I dare say that depending on the pocket of the state, there's areas that were dry in June, and so I think they were able to root. The other part that kind of is nice is that this crop has advanced faster than even last year, which was planting progress that was so early. We had enough heat units in May and June this year that I think the roots of those plants have gotten down deep. Now, are they going to keep going deeper when there's ample rain? Probably not. And so I don't think we're in a case where we've created this huge vegetative monster that we've got to maintain through July and August. That's typically my worry when we get a lot of rain or more rainfall in June, is that we're just going to have all this vegetative material. So the internodes are going to be extended. And we're going to have plants that are up to my chest. And then we're going to have to maintain that biomass and, oh, by the way, create the pods and retain those for seed fill. Right now, I don't see those kind of plants out there. I see a good-looking crop. I don't see a tall, lanky crop. So we do need the rainfall in August and September. If it turns off, you know, dry, I mean, that's going to rule the day. But I don't think that we're in dire straits in terms of we need, you know, an inch every 3 days kind of thing either.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
What about in corn? Is this a big concern here? I know, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what we need during pollination. What about for August, September, as we go in toward harvest here?
Well, I think, you know, you always need, you know, adequate moisture to carry us through grain fill, right? I think a lot of the state got the adequate moisture it needed to get through pollination. But you still need that moisture to make sure we're setting those kernels, we're establishing those, and then filling those kernels the rest of the season. A little bit of concerns, right? I mentioned a lot of the root lodging that we noticed was primarily in the younger corn. And that was corn that was planted a little bit later. So I would expect, you know, some of those fields, one of the reasons probably why is just the roots weren't as established in those parts of the areas. They maybe were planted a little bit later, didn't have the root system that was maybe just wetter conditions in those areas that were planted a little bit later, maybe just not as, you know, as deep of a root system. So again, those areas, you know, whether or not, you know, the root system is as deep in those areas, and maybe they may not be able to carry themselves as long if we just, you know, shut the faucet off right now. But I do think, you know, a lot of the state got the really necessary rains that it needs. You know, if we can get through July with corn, that's really, really critical with moisture. I would, you know, kind of, you know, some concerns, right, with just the sheer volume moisture, is just kind of monitoring the nitrogen levels. We have noticed, you know, in a few of our nitrogen rate trials that we have, just some of those lower end rates that maybe in years past, right, wouldn't start showing some of the end deficiencies. They are starting to show some of those end deficiencies now. So you think about leaching, denitrification, if you have ponding issues like that. So things to monitor, things to watch if we run out a little bit of nitrogen in some of those areas. Another big issue, again, is disease, right? I know that's on a lot of people's minds, just with how much moisture we've had. And then it was pretty humid. It kind of lightened up the last week or so, and the temperatures have lightened up as well. But it was really humid there for a while. And you think about just really foggy mornings, high humidity, you know, a lot of moisture out there. Walking a lot of our trials, right, the disease is still staying pretty low, but I would expect that probably to change over the last few weeks. I know there's a lot of fungicide going out right now, but something to be mindful of. But again, it's still important to, if we can, you know, catch timely rains all the way until we catch to maturity. The grain fill is really, really important. We've seen that the last couple of years, that we've had outstanding grain fill conditions, cooler temps, and having adequate moistures. That's translated to record yields in the state. So for sure, we still need moisture the rest of the year.
So Dan, I know we had Darcy on a few weeks ago, and mm-hmm. some reports popped really early. Earliest I think you mm-hmm. or her have ever seen on tar spot. Has that exploded more? Has it kind of been contained, or is it just like it's there? We just need to be mindful mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah, it's been interesting, at least from my perspective. I know Darcy probably watches a lot closer than I do, but just from my perspective and the trials that we had, you know, the early planted stuff that we had, that we were catching some of it really early, it's just kind of stagnated out there and really hasn't exploded in areas. You know, I think maybe some of the really hot temperatures, you know, we're doing a lot of work with tar spot and stuff. I've helped Darcy with, you know, summarize all the weather data that they've had since I think 2016 or so. Seeing that, you know, temperature is a really big driver of this disease, cooler temperatures primarily, you know, cooler temps, May, June, even parts of July. And we got really, really hot mm-hmm. there for quite a while. It got fairly dry as well after we caught those initial diseases. So, you know, I think it really kind of stagnated the disease. You know, I would be concerned that it probably will start picking up again.
Sure.
It's gotten a bit cooler here of late, yeah. especially yeah. at nighttime.
Yeah,
it's
so these cooler temps, the humidity, you know, the amount of moisture. Another concern of mine, too, is the southern parts of the state. You think about Hurricane Beryl and mm-hmm. what they can bring in terms of southern rust. I would expect, you know, a lot of those spores, you know, something like southern rust is different than tar spot. Tar spot, you always have it. Southern rust, it's kind of a clean slate every year, but is brought up by weather conditions. So I would expect, you know, that hurricane, you know, moving through into Texas and pushing sure. those storm systems up this way, I would expect southern rust to make some movement as well. But again, it's just, we're just watching, right? And a lot of farmers I've talked to are just watching. Some are spraying now, but some are just, you know, we're kind of holding off, we're kind of waiting. Stuff mm-hmm. is still pretty clean right now, but we're doing everything we can to just hold off until we make that spray.
I think going back, looking at the last few weeks of weather, I mean, it was oppressive. It was, you know, hot and humid. It's like 90, 90 or 95, 95 on both heat and humidity, it seemed like. And so I want to kind of put a flag there, a pin there, and then kind of come out, okay, how long ago was that? Was that a week ago? Was that 10 days ago, 4 days ago? Because of, depending on the disease, right, that's mm-hmm. a condition that is conducive for an infection, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of these diseases, and depending on which one we're talking about, it's a 10 to 14, maybe 21-day lag period from infection yep. to visual lesions or symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what a lot of people need to kind of put in their mind is, okay, when did we have that again? Let me write that down. And then, yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, there's other diseases. Let's go on the soybean front where it's got enough humidity and moisture, but it's cooler, moderate temperatures. Oh, okay, white mold, that tends to be one that comes in there. So I think our growers and crop consultants need to be kind of putting those pieces together a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another important aspect is that, you know, if you, you know, we preach VT, R1 for, mm-hmm. for consistent timings, but I think, you know, the R2s, the R3s are still really good times to get that fungicide out. You know, I know a lot of people have been going or are just ready to go. It's still a good time to put those foliar sprays on again, it's back to that point where we had those conditions that just really stand out to us that are probably conducive for disease. I would expect a lot of disease to really start showing up over the next couple of weeks. So again, it's coming back to the scouting, making those informed decisions. But, you know, a lot of the locations around the state with the weather that we're having probably are should be looking at whether or not we need to spray.
Well, and the rain may be soaking up, but certainly can't get sprayers in. So exactly. Your R1s weren't happening probably anyway. It was more like R2s anyway.
Exactly.
What about disease on the soybean front, Sean? It's you talked about how advanced this soybean crop is. Does that advance disease at all?
Well, that's the thing. Right now, I'm going to echo, we're fairly, knock on wood somewhere, fairly clean on the disease front and on the soybeans. And so it is an advanced crop. I went and looked. We're before the crop report that comes out here on this Monday. But last week, at the state level, we were 51% flowering and I think 22% podding. And that is probably a solid 7 to 10 days ahead of a 5-year average. And so that's some good things, I think, come to my mind. You asked a question about, okay, if the spigot turns off, you know, how are we going to do? Well, if we're this advanced, we're already starting to create pods and we're already starting to fill and we've got good moisture now. So, I mean, we could look at having an earlier crop as far as harvest. So I do preach you late August and early September makes or breaks today's soybeans, this modern soybean, but we are advanced. So it may be more of the traditional, just it's August and that first week of September, because we could be pulling the trigger by September 2023, depending on your area, right? So I think that is in our favor, is that the crop is advancing that way. It is a compact plant in terms of the fields I've looked at. And so the internodes were very, very short early on. And so that's, it keeps us at waist level, kind of 3 foot, maybe 40 inches, instead of going up to 5 feet. And so I think this is a good recipe for a crop that's going to have the yield potential as well as probably not have as much biomass, and I think about that microclimate effect with diseases. So right now, we look pretty good. I haven't seen much disease. I'll echo what I just said a moment ago, that we did have some humidity and some heat. So, you know, be looking for those lesions here, you know, another week or so and see if anything's popping. The industry, in terms of spray timings, R3, that's first pod, is fairly standard. I personally, on my agronomic trials, I go R4. So I think that gives us a little flexibility in this time of spraying. So that's, I guess, kind of similar to what you were just talking about, Dan, on the corn front, is that, okay, you got R1, R2. Soybeans, you got R3, R4, and you got some time.
Let's take a time out here on the Purdue Crop Chat. We'll come back. Some folks, their attention is shifting a little bit here. It's 4-H fair time. It's state fair time, but still some things we need to focus on. Let's chat about that here when we come back on the Purdue Crop Chat.
Biodiesel is bringing value back to the farm, accelerating the demand for Indiana soybeans, increasing market value, and reducing greenhouse gases. The Indiana Soybean Alliance puts checkoff dollars to work, researching and promoting biodiesel in Indiana, growing production, creating nearly 3,200 jobs across Indiana, and increasing soybean ROI $36 per acre. The future of fuel is biodiesel. Learn more about biofuels at yourcheckoff.org.
We're back on the Purdue Crop Chat. Eric Pfeiffer here, Dan Cornquinn over there, and soybean Sean Castile here to my right. And again, folks are in 4-H fair mode. They're in state fair mode, but things still continue out here agronomically. As they are doing all of these things, Sean, here, final thoughts on the Purdue Crop Chat today. What do we need to be keeping an eye on, and what do folks need to be doing back home on the farm?
Yeah, I think when you get a chance to get out, you run home from the fair, run out right quick. Just see what growth stage you are in the soybeans and see how well it's advancing. See how the pods are loading up and just have a good handle of that. And then just be looking for those disease lesions that might be popping if you didn't spray. I'm getting texts, hey, is fungicide going to spray pay this year? And I'm like, well, it depends, right? I don't know the field, right? And so I think that's something that you need to be looking for, as well as insect control. We did have some people that put soybeans in more marginal conditions. So state fair is coming. That the state fair disease does tend to show up around that point. So sudden death syndrome. So it'd be good to kind of be looking for that. And in particular, we've talked a lot about diseases today, but look for the intravenal chlorosis, you know, and within that, that's classic SDS, but it's also classic brown stem rot. And we have a new disease that's been popping up the last couple of years, red crown rot. So I think it'd be really worth your time. If you see those spots, oh, that's SDS, go out, dig them up, take a look at them, split the stem, see if you have a brown stem in the middle of the pith, or if you have some red, just some development on the outside of the stem at the soil line, in case you have red crown rot.
By the way, I don't know that the state fair folks would love you calling it state fair disease.
Well, they do have a topic that, you know, they focus on every year, right?
Dan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that the crop around the state looks really good. It's just whether or not we can maintain that. I think disease is the big thing on a lot of people's mind, just to be watching those things. I know a lot of fungicide sprays are going out. It's a good time to put on fungicide sprays at the R1, R2 timing, even into R3, right? I think the data typically shows us that R4 is too late for some of those fungicide sprays, so it's a really good time to be watching things, monitoring things, making those applications if you need to. You know, one thing is to note is that if you did have areas that did have significant ponding, if you had some areas that maybe did have some of that root lodging, or you know, just maybe some green snap out there, I know there's a few reports about that, just to monitor those fields, especially as we get close to harvest. You know, a lot of times I wouldn't expect a whole lot of yield loss depending on, you know, how long the duration of the flooding, or you know, when the root lodging actually happened and if that crop actually recovered. But those fields probably are a little bit more susceptible as we get closer to harvest, right? So those, probably keep an eye on them. You know, maybe those are the fields that we harvest a little bit sooner, just to you know, not have any issues where if we have a significant storm roll through around harvest that we've got a lot of lodging and to pick those up. But the big thing is, for my perspective, right, condition ratings, you know, around the state look good. The crop looks good. A lot of our research trials, the corn looks really, really good. It's staying pretty clean. It's just whether or not we can keep that going as we move into a lot of grain fill around the state.
And Dan isn't just a radio and podcast star. He does still do some writing, and we have an article from Dan at HoosierAgToday.com talking about this root lodging issue, so visit that site as well.
I think, you know, one thing to notice, to mention about that is that Alex Lindsay and Peter Thomas in Ohio State did a lot of work the last 3-4 years updating root lodging, you know, the impact of root lodging on yield and the things to watch for. So, you know, I did put a lot of citations to their work in there. So it's a lot of really good work that is actually, you know, not from 1995, right, in universities, from very, very recent newer hybrids, new information. So I think that's a really good resource out there right now.
Yield predictions before we go.
I'm still sticking at my 204.
204. I was at 61.
Sticking to your guns. That'll do it for this Purdue Crop Chat. We'll be around the state fair. If you see a tall guy, I'm sure you'll have a soybean hat or something, right?
Something like that.
And you'll be wearing the big corn hats,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Big corn hats.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah. So just stop
take
by
the N off of it, though.
We'll be around the state fair. Stop by, say hi. Enjoy the state fair. Enjoy all your 4-H county fairs. This is the Purdue Crop Chat. We'll catch you again next time.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile. Made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests, and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.